history. This has been Black History Month 365. BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Hey, thank you, Don. Mandy!
Hello! Happy Monday!
And happy Monday to you. So, did you have a nice weekend?
I had a great weekend. It started off with snow. Hello.
Yes,
that
right.
That was so much fun.
Wasn't that fun? Did the boys love it?
Yes.
So
did.
You live far enough away from Houston that you probably get a lot of snow, huh?
I do not live that far. And yes, we made a snowman and it was
you
awesome.
Did?
Yes.
Wow.
It was good times. Did you play in the snow?
I saw the snow and I went out a little bit, but I didn't. I walked in it. I walked in the
you
snow.
You didn't even throw one snowball?
No, I should have, though,
you
right?
You should have.
At least at my dog
Where's
or something.
Where's the kid in you?
I know, right? That child is at risk. I'm just telling you.
doesn't know what to do.
I know. But what a fun thing, though, huh?
It was fun. And then it was a beautiful snow. Weekend.
Yeah.
It was nice.
It was very nice. So we have a good show today, huh?
We do.
Hey, are you getting ready for the holidays, by the way? I mean, the holidays are like right upon us.
I am ready.
And are the boys really excited about it?
They are very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely excited.
Yeah, wow. And my daughter's coming into town, so I'm looking forward to that. But you know what's going to be the highlight of Christmas Day?
What is that?
The holiday spectacular here on KPFT.
2 hours.
2 hours of Growing Up in America. It's our holiday spectacular where we do our favorite holiday hymns and songs and carols. And we ask people, all of our friends who've been on the show during the year, to call in and they tell a little Christmas story and Christmas wish for the year. It's
That's
sort of
right.
fun, right?
It's always fun.
So it's going to be from 2 to 4.
2 to 4?
2 to 4 on Christmas Day. You'll
there
be able to listen to the.
I know. Everyone can sit by the radio with their fire on.
Right? And just listen to Bob and Mandy.
And,
I mean, can you think
and
of,
all our friends in Houston who can, call in.
I don't know if you can really think of a better way to celebrate the holidays. Don, I mean, you're going to be part of the holiday spectacular, right?
Am I?
Yeah. You're on the program.
Oh,
you
thank
are.
You so much.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Now
joking.
I know.
You're joking.
Now you know. He's planning it out. Don's more excited than anyone, I think.
I know. I can't believe that 2017 is almost over.
Yeah.
It'll be a good time.
It's a big old deal.
It is a big deal.
Well, what a rough year for many of us, right, with the hurricane and everything.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep,
so good show today, Mandy.
Yes, it is. We have some great people lined up.
So we're going to start off the program. Our good buddy Jenny Iyer is going to be here. She is the director of the Center for Child Health Research and Policy at Children at Risk. And the number today, Mandy, 30.
30?
Yeah.
What could it mean?
I don't know. 30. That's about how old you are.
That's how old I feel. Stay tuned and find out what that number means.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Data Head, we'll be talking with Rick Noriega from Ronald McDonald House about his work to help Houston families who have seriously ill children.
We know Rick.
We do.
Rick from way back. I mean, I remember you and I had some anti-dropout legislation of the state legislature.
When he was Representative Noriega.
He carried it for us.
Yes,
you remember
he did.
That?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah, so that should be good. We're also going to have on the program today Ellen Efsick. She is the executive director of Girls, Inc. here in Greater Houston. Girls, Inc. is a great national organization. She'll be talking with us about the mission at Girls, Inc. to encourage and empower young girls in Houston and all over the country. We've done some work with Girls, Inc. in the past. They've co-sponsored efforts with us, and they do some wonderful work.
We want to keep on empowering girls, that's for sure.
That's what we want to do.
And then today on our social content scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion. Thumbs up or thumbs down. Oh, wow, this is extremely controversial. I don't know. Holiday parties at school.
Oh, my goodness. You picked a controversial issue,
man.
Mandy.
You're taking credit for this one.
Holiday parties at school.
That's right.
So,
thumbs up, thumbs down.
I mean,
should we have them?
Are you love holiday parties at school, right? But I guess a lot of schools are saying only two parties a year. Boom, that's it. And it could be a holiday party. It could be something else. Is that the rule at a lot of school districts now, Mandy?
So I think that because of time on task and also nutrition standards requirements, that there's two parties allowed. So our school, it's not even called a holiday party. It's called a winter party.
Like just in celebration of the solstice, sort of pagan. Is that what they're doing? Is that the deal?
It's very Christmas.
Out in Fort Bend. Out in Fort Bend, they just don't honor the
it's
holidays.
Winter.
Yeah, wow.
Because it's cold over there.
But that's interesting, right? It's just winter party.
Yeah, with Santa and Christmas trees.
Oh, but they have Santa. And they sing, "Oh, come all you faithful and joy to the world," right? That's what they do. It's the winter party. It's the winter party. Our final guest today will be education expert Jason Bernal. He's the chief school officer of Secondary Transformation Schools at HISD, the Houston Independent School District. And Jason used to be the CEO of Yes Prep. I mean, this guy knows education. He also knows about working with kids in poverty. And he'll be sharing his thoughts on the importance of strong leadership. And we're going to talk specifically about strong leadership in terms of turning around schools.
There we go.
So
he's the man.
Should be a good show.
We're going to have a fantastic show today.
Is it ever not good, Mandy?
I think it's always great.
Right. It is always good, right? Because you're on it, right? So it's,
sure.
It's
yeah,
all,
that's what it is.
It's all part of it.
No, stop.
Last week, you and I were in Austin. We were talking about the hurricane, right? We were talking to legislators.
Right.
We did a presentation.
We had an event at the Capitol.
We brought people, organizations that are working on recovery, hurricane recovery. And then I called into the show, Mandy. I don't know if you heard this little part, but they said I was taking over the show.
I don't believe it.
Can you believe that?
No.
Taking over my own show. And one of the questions I asked them was, you know, what they thought the man of the year or the person of the year should be for Time Magazine. And at this point, they were the finalists. And I was saying, I want the Me Too movement. I felt very strongly that this is the issue of the year. And we need to talk about this more. And it ended up being the issue of the year, basically, the Me Too. And it's an amazing issue.
And the conversation continues.
I'm interested in talking at some point. How do we talk to our kids about this? How do we talk to our young girls, right, about this? And our young boys,
and boys
frankly,
too.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So interesting stuff. Hey, up first on the program, ready for a little data head?
Your voice sounds great then, but we really need it recorded so people can see what you're doing
when
behind
I'm,
the mic.
Oh, like I'm dancing and everything
yeah,
with the...
it's entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
There we go. Okay.
People have suggested we should have a Growing Up in America TV show. I mean, with your pretty face, I think, and my dynamic voice, don't you think it would make for a good show?
It'd be great for a good laugh.
Jenny Iyer's on the line with us. She's our data head for the day. Jenny, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Very good. Don't you think a Growing Up in America TV show would be a good idea?
Absolutely.
I knew.
I would love to be, you know, a sideline reporter.
Yeah, but you like a content expert, right?
Yes.
You'd be talking about health and stuff and...
Absolutely.
So.
Maybe a cooking demonstration or two with you as chef.
Yeah. So Jenny and I were at, you know, we were at a press conference in Dallas talking about schools that do a good job in terms of food. And we did it at the Dallas Nutrition Center. And behind us was a whole cooking demonstration. It was pretty fun, Jenny.
It was so fun and absolutely delicious. I had five helpings.
It's because they made, it was like a, what was it, an apple?
It was a blueberry peach, I think.
Crumble.
Kind of crumble, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It smelled delicious. I didn't have anything, but it smelled delicious.
So. Jenny approved?
Jenny was a
very much Jenny approved.
And was it healthy, Jenny? I mean, they used a significant amount of brown sugar, I thought.
It was healthy. They, you know, this is something they serve in the breakfast line to their kiddos. So it has
to
meet those strict USDA guidelines. So they it might have seemed seemed as though they used a lot of brown sugar.
But they were making a big batch, though.
They did. They made a batch for all, you know, we had tons of people in the audience.
But that's what good cooks do. They make it taste bad, but prepare it healthy.
Exactly.
That's what we try on all our kids,
No, it didn't
right?
taste bad. It tasted good.
What did I say?
You said taste bad.
Oh, no, tastes good.
Tastes good, but it's actually healthy.
That's right. Yeah.
No, we don't want anything that tastes bad. No one does.
Yes, okay.
So maybe your kids. Maybe your kids settle for that, man.
But
Jenny's kids don't settle for that. So Jenny, our number today.
30.
Is that Mandy's age?
Yes.
Mine
too.
I'm getting old.
And me too. So what is the number 30, Jenny?
The 30 represents during this upcoming holiday break, students who rely on school meals for their main source of nutrition, they could lose access to up to 30 meals while they are out of school for those 2 weeks.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, we hear so many times from food experts. Brian Greed from the Food Bank often talks about this, is that it's when school is not in session. It's during the summer, during the winter break, that kids get very food insecure, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of a time we forget about kids being super hungry, but they're hungry even more so on the break when they don't have access to those 3 meals that they can get at school.
That's what I was about to say. So that's essentially when they eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner or snack right at school, and then they're out for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And what are school districts and neighborhoods doing to alleviate the food insecurity of these kids missing these meals, Jenny?
Sure. So there are several school districts that are stepping up to the plate and are actually serving meals over the holiday break. Up here in the North Texas area, Dallas ISD serve meals over Thanksgiving break, and they are opening up schools to serve a breakfast and a lunch during the holiday break, a couple of days during the holiday break as well, to try to help kids still have access to good nutrition.
Bravo, Dallas. That's
and if parents walk down with their kids, do parents get fed as well, or is it just the kids?
Sure. So, you know, I think that is up to the district. The district will only be reimbursed from a kid who's eating age 0 to 18. But, you know, oftentimes we have schools that will open it up to parents so that they can get a warm meal. They might just have to pay a reduced rate of to be able to eat with their kiddos.
Like $2 or something.
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Yeah.
Well, it's something that, you know, people need to pay attention. Do you know, is HISD, we can ask them.
I don't know if they're doing
that. I would assume, because I know that there are more people than usual relying on HISD.
Do you know, Jenny,
right,
if the Houston Independent School District is doing that?
You know, I looked it up, and I couldn't find it on their website to see, and it's still kind of, I mean, they could still announce it. They have plenty of time to announce that they're doing it, but I didn't see anything on their website.
Yeah. And are we seeing this around the country a little bit more, Jenny, where school districts working in collaboration with others are doing their best to try to feed kids and families during this time?
We are. There's a program that allows schools to serve that after-school meal piece, and that same program allows schools to serve meals over the weekends and over holiday breaks, and more schools are school districts are getting into that after-school meal kind of realm, and through that, they're expanding even more so. So it's a little bit slow, but I would definitely say schools are really understanding the importance that their meals play in their students' lives and are anxious to kind of really step up and do what they can to make sure that their kids have food over the holiday break.
You know, I was doing an interview with the Rio Grande Valley Monitor last week, and I think it appeared in Sunday's paper, but we were talking about schools doing more supper programs. And, you know, Jenny, you and I talked about this 5 years ago. Nowhere in the state of Texas was anyone doing a supper program, but now 44% of low-income districts are doing supper programs, and we're seeing a lot of them down in the valley. It's amazing what we can do, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture funds these programs, but it's amazing what we can do to alleviate hunger.
Absolutely, and, you know, it really, you're right. Several years ago, there were hardly any school districts serving an after-school meal, and now, kind of everywhere you turn, somebody new is doing it. And I think it just takes one school district, one or two, to really kind of get into it, and others get to see what it looks like, that it's not super scary, and really jump on board. It's very exciting to see that happening, because so many of our kids are going to go home and not have access to a nutritious meal. So for them to be able to get something before they get on the bus, and it's paired with an educational enrichment activity, so really getting two different benefits for the price of one.
Wow, amazing. And Jenny's doing a great job, isn't she?
She is.
We love Jenny.
I know
so.
It. So happy holidays, Jenny.
Thanks.
Merry
happy
Christmas.
Happy holidays to y'all, too.
I think we'll see you at the big holiday bash.
This week.
Yeah, very good. All right, Jenny, take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank
show.
You. We want to thank Jenny. She does such great work, doesn't she?
She does.
And
good for children in regards to health and nutrition, for moms. So all really important stuff.
Yeah. Oh, we got a little bit of theme music. How about this, huh?
I like it.
I don't know. I don't know why we came up with this one for Ronald McDonald House, but on the line with us is our good buddy Rick Noriega, who's the new CEO of Ronald McDonald House. Rick, how you doing, man?
Outstanding, Bob. How are you and Mandy doing?
We're doing fantastic.
Great to hear your voice.
We were just talking about how Mandy and I were talking about how you remember. How many years? 10 years ago, when you were in the state legislature, and we were talking about dropouts and children, and you carried a big piece of legislation for us around dropouts, and so.
Well, we did it. House Bill 1403. Actually, Bob, I had this conversation with Dr. Rod Page, our friend, a few weeks ago,
yeah.
And who really brought forward an individual that was in need of access to higher education, Houston Community College, young man by the name of Rosendo Ticas, and that was the pebble in the pond that initiated the Texas Dream Act, which we were first in the United States that actually made higher education accessible to certain high school students who had been through our system their entire lives. And then it grew from that initiative to national movement, and it's still obviously, the DACA kids are still fighting that fight today at the federal level.
That's a legacy piece of legislation, isn't it, Rick? I mean, that was a huge piece of legislation for you and for us, right?
Well, absolutely, and your help and support of that really it demonstrates what good public policy looks like when we give access to our greatest asset in the state, which is our human capital, and so. And it really is something that we collectively can all be proud of as Texans.
Yeah, absolutely. So now you're at Ronald McDonald House. What a great organization. And tell us a little bit about your mission over there, Rick.
Well, right now, as you and Mandy are aware, Ronald McDonald House provides a home away from home for those families that are going through very challenging medical and health issues with their children. And it provides a safe, secure facility that provides all the wraparound sustainability pieces that families need while their children are awaiting transplants, going through cancer treatment and the like. And, you know, this particular initiative here in Houston has been in existence for over 30 years. We're in a very aggressive expansion program based on following the footprint of our great Texas Medical Center. So the demand for families that are in need of a safe place, an affordable place to stay is critical. We're still turning away 12 to 15 families a day that are our guests in the Texas Medical Center. And we are very much involved in this expansion effort. But in addition, really starting to look at the leader in the area of family-centered care that looks at our program intervention and looks at the research component of what we do, of how we help in assisting, you know, cutting down on hospital stay days, helping family mental health with the intervention during a very very critical time.
It sounds like you're treating it more holistically, right? Mm-hmm. Which is very much needed and oftentimes less expensive, right? When you do those wraparound services. And Rick, I know that the need has been increasing, particularly since we are near the Texas Medical Center. But has the need increased? Have you seen an increase after Harvey? Did that impact the care of any of these kids that y'all are dealing with?
Yes, we have. I mean, because, you know, our neighbors and residents in and around the Houston area that are now in need of hotel space, for instance, mm-hmm. that vacancy rates have declined, and the need for a place to stay while they're receiving treatment has increased. The other thing, Mandy, that's really driven up the need for a safe place to be is just the procedures and the things that are amazing that are happening in the Texas Medical Center and the neonatal units and what they're doing for families and children, you know, that have not been born yet. Mm-hmm. And so because of the procedures and the advances in science, that as well has increased demand for families and future parents.
And how do people sign up for this? You know, so if I know of poor families that are coming to town or that are in town and their children, one of their children is going through some sort of medical service, how do they apply to get a free place to stay, Rick?
Well, they can obviously go online to Ronald McDonald House Houston, but our relationship specifically with Texas Children's Hospital, with Herman Hospital, Children Memorial Herman, and MD Anderson, they have social workers there, Bob, who do referrals for us, and they, you know, pretty much look at the need and ability, or rather, inability to to pay, and along with that, length of stay and a variety of variables like that, and vacancy to see if, you know, we're actually able to house someone based on our on the demand.
Wow.
And have you seen, you were talking about kind of wraparound services, which is I call them, or family centered.
Sure.
I mean, someone comes to the hospital, maybe they have leukemia, right? But there are so many other needs that need to be addressed. From your perspective, is Houston doing a good job? And don't just say yes because we're here. Or do you see gaps in services or policies that can help support these children and families?
Well, naturally, I see that one of the things that would be helpful is increased receipt of Medicaid and families that qualify for Medicaid because, you know, it costs us approximately about $110 a day to provide for a family a night. And we will, you know, ask for if they're a nominal amount, but if they were Medicaid, if they were able to qualify for Medicaid or the state received more Medicaid dollars, it would allow for greater services to families that were in need, as an example. Other things are, I just think, too, Mandy, just the synchronization of what people are doing. An example is our relationship. We had a great huddle with Texas Children's Hospital and looking at research and the ability to better do case management with Texas Children's Hospital with folks that are staying at the Ronald McDonald House as well as children that are receiving services. And so that we're looking at the entire family and things that we can coordinate referrals for different family needs through social workers, et cetera, whether it's the employment of the family or whether it's referrals to other type of services the family may qualify for. We can do a better job of that coordination and synchronization.
Rick, well, we're so happy that you landed over at Ronald McDonald House. That's a great organization, and you're a great leader. And you've done some great things, and this is just another cap on the, another feather and great stuff to do there. So we thank you. We wish you and Melissa a wonderful holiday season, by the way, and say hi to her for us.
And, well, thank you for the shout out, and we thank you and the folks at Children at Risk and all that you do for the kids, and tremendous work, and always love working with you guys, Bob.
Very good. Take care.
Bye.
We'll talk to you soon, okay? Take care, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
So it's always good to hear from Rick, right? Yeah.
He's a good guy. He's a great guy. And yeah. He's just someone that, you know, is going to fight for kids and family.
Yeah, he's a good one. So, hey, it's you're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT. And, hey, Donnie, you ready for a little break? Get a little bit of weather and traffic?
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay, very good. Go ahead.
All right, folks, let's look at your traffic and weather report. Right now, you're feeling a good 73 degrees outside. Guess what? Later tonight, 47 degrees. Let's see tomorrow if it changes. Oh, 64 degrees, and then low of 43 degrees outside Tuesday night. So just know, keep a jacket in a car because you're going to get kind of warm and then really, really cold later that night. Right now, on the Gulf Freeway northbound before FM 2351, we have an accident involving two vehicles eating up the right shoulder, right lane, and center lane. On 288 southbound at Airport Boulevard, we have an accident involving two vehicles eating up the right shoulder. And on Southwest Freeway northbound at FM 1092 Murphy, we have a heavy truck vehicle fire. Be careful out there. That's eating up the right shoulder, right lane, and center lane. As far as stalls, on South Sam Houston Tollway eastbound before South Post Oak, we have a heavy truck stall eating up the right shoulder. Also on West Park Tollway eastbound after Highway 6, another heavy truck stall eating up the what? Right shoulder and right lane. Katy Freeway westbound at Beltway 8, we have a stall eating up the left shoulder. Also 610 North Loop eastbound at TC Jester, we have a heavy truck stall eating up the right shoulder. And West Sam Houston Tollway southbound at Hammerley, we have a stall. And guess what, folks? Eating up that right shoulder and entrance ramp. Now back to you folks in the studio.
All right, Mandy. A lot of right shoulders there, right?
There's a lot of right shoulders. A lot of highs and lows.
Highs and lows and right shoulders. Don is the man. Don is the man. Hey, up next is Ellen Efsick. Ellen is the executive director of Girls, Inc. A little bit of theme music for Ellen right there, right?
Okay.
I don't know what that is. Do you, Mandy? Oh, Girls Will Run the World. Of course, now I know. There we go. And we love Girls, Inc. Ellen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Dr. Bob?
Very good. Very good. Thanks for being
Happy
on the
Monday.
Happy Monday to you.
So, a lot of, you know, I've known Girls, Inc. for a long time and the great work that they do, Ellen. Tell us, give our audience a little bit of a snapshot of what you guys are doing at Girls, Inc.
Well, Girls, Inc. is a national nonprofit organization that serves girls and inspires them to be strong, smart, and bold. And we do that here in Houston through enrichment programs in the classrooms and through our camps that cover everything from anti-bullying to financial literacy to media literacy to knowing their rights. It's a great program. We work right now in three different school districts in our area. We're looking to grow. Each of the affiliates of the national organization are independently run. So we have our own board, we have our own fundraising, we have our own programming. In the Houston area, we're particularly well known for our STEM programming.
Oh, that's excellent.
We go out and do science, technology, engineering, and math. And we have girls building robots and making all kinds of slime.
So from your perspective, Ellen, is there girl pride out there? Like, so when you look at the school districts, and I'm assuming that you're dealing with teenagers, the accurate high school, are girls, do you perceive that they stick together, that they're confident, or is this program something that really has got to pull them out and out of their shell?
I would say that this program does that, and I see. What we see is as girls get older, that level of confidence seems to diminish.
Hmm.
And the example that I'm going to use is There was a young woman in sixth grade. She wrote us a letter recently. She actually applied for a scholarship with the national organization and described her experiences with Girls Inc. here, saying that she came in sixth grade, middle school, scared, and would cry. And she said, I know now that that's a psychological response to fear, which I thought was pretty amazing for her to have that much self-awareness about it. But she said that Girls Inc. gave her confidence that she doesn't do that anymore. She is now one of the co-leaders of the group in her junior year in high school. And I, in fact, met her when I went out and did a site visit. This young woman came up to my hand, confidently shook my hand and said, I am very happy to be a part of Girls Inc. My name's Nicole, and I'm applying for a scholarship, and I just want you to know how great the program is. And she was unrecognizable to the girl she described, the sixth grader in the essay. So
that's a good story, isn't it? That's a good story. Yep. It does seem, though, that organizations, whether it's Girl Scouts or going to all-girls schools or being a part of Girls Inc., that research shows that goes a long way towards building the esteem of girls. What is it about girls being together and working together that creates that, Ellen?
Well, I think part of it is it's resisting a gender stereotype that they face in the classroom on a daily basis. As they get older, there's the assumption that girls don't know math, they don't know science, they don't get called on as often. That's true. That's been proven. Their opinions aren't taken as seriously. I think mansplaining starts at a very early age. I would say what we do is important as far as developing girls' self-esteem, but it's also in communities where it's needed the most, I think. We are targeting low-income, high-needs communities, and we are working in elementary, middle, and high schools. They're scaffolding our programs in a feeder pattern. So we're creating strong, smart, bold girls in our communities.
That's right. What school districts are you in? You said three, right?
We're in three. We're in Clear Creek. We're at McWhorter Elementary, but we're in the Cashmere Gardens area with Houston ISD, and then we're in the Aldine ISD.
Nice. Excellent. Wow. Yeah. When you think about the programs that you guys do for girls, I mean, do you see a progression when you're doing elementary, middle, and high school? And you talked about this one young woman, but what are the changes that you're seeing with young women and being a part of your program?
I think they're growing in their confidence and their skill base. I think they are looking toward the future. As they progress in our curriculum, there's more exposure to mentors and opportunity as they go along in the process. We're seeing more girls in the middle school area than high school, and we want to build that, and that's why we started with the elementary building up that way.
That's fantastic. When I have spoken to girls at Girls Inc. in Greater Houston, have you ever met with these girls? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are amazing. And just their perspective on life, you want to shield them from everything. But what I like about this program is let's talk about reality. How can we build, our community, your confidence, and be there for each other so that all can be successful is fantastic. So why aren't there more programs like this for girls is my question. You would think that every school district would have some kind of program
in every school.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you don't see it. Is it something, do you see over the past years, is this a trend that there's more of a demand or is it staying flat?
I think there's more of a demand and we are growing the program to meet that demand. But I also think we're fighting the assumption that it's an all-girl environment and that it needs to be an all-girl environment, and we believe it does. We believe that creates a safe space for girls to talk about things that challenge them and gives them a safe space to take risks and feel like they can succeed and take pride in their success without diminishing it.
But you're saying that, like, school districts or leadership or just other people don't think it should be all girls?
Oh, I'm not saying that.
There's plenty of all-boys stuff out there.
I think there might be a lack of awareness of that, and we're looking at building on that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That's interesting. You see a lot of all-boys stuff, don't you?
All the time.
But I can tell you, as the father of a daughter...
Culturally,
yeah,
it's
all-boys. No, I got it. As the father of a daughter, you know, the more things for girls... It's real important for girls to have programs like this, right? Yep. This is so, so important. Ellen, how do people find out more about Girls Inc.?
They can visit our website. It's girlsinc-houston.org. They can visit our website and learn about that. They can call us and talk to us about that. We have a spring camp that's coming up that's going to take place on March 12th through 16th. We'll have more information about that in January. That's for girls from 7 to 12. And then we'll have summer camps in June and July. That June camp is girls from 7 to 12, and the July camp is July 9th through the 20th.
Good way
for teenagers.
That's a good way for girls to sort of be introduced as well to girls.
It's a great way to introduce them. We do bring in girls that we work in with the schools. We would love to make more school administrators aware of our programming and make more of it available.
Very good. Hey, thank you, Ellen, for all that you do with Girls Inc., and thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for including us and letting us share our information, and we're so grateful for what you're doing for the community. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio 90.1 in Houston, and you're with Mandy and Dr. Bob as we talk about children and children's policy, and we ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down? Are you ready,
Mandy?
Of
course.
Yeah. There we go. Boom.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, so what is on our schedule today for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, Mandy?
Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, holiday parties at school. Should schools be having holiday parties? That's the question.
Holiday parties in general, right? Valentine's, Halloween.
In general.
Christmas.
Easter. What are all the other holidays? I don't know. Lots of them. Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. And part of this came up in staff meeting that you are seeing a decline in parties
right,
at school.
Right, and you talked about how they have winter party in your school, your boys' school. It's not the holiday party anymore.
Right. Well, and so partly because you used to have parties all the time.
I remember parties all the time.
When I went to school.
Could you have enough holidays?
Definitely
as a kid?
Had more than two parties.
We had more, yeah.
But because of the demands of school, because of finances, but then also health and nutrition, right? I mean, should you be eating a cupcake every day because it's someone's birthday and then bringing in all this party food, you know, once a month?
If you're asking me, I'm saying yes, you should be having that many cupcakes.
Well, you would be wrong, sir. Would be wrong. No. So what do you think on this?
Thumbs up or thumbs down, Mandy? I mean, these holiday parties. You seem to think it's not healthy. You shouldn't have this many cupcakes. So are you saying thumbs down?
No, I'm not saying that. But if the question is, should it be called a holiday party or a winter party? It doesn't.
And
I don't care.
You don't care.
To be honest with you, is it holiday or winter? I don't know. School's about to be done. I mean, I can speak for Fort Bend, which is extremely diverse, right? They call it a winter party. That's fine, but that's not to say that everyone there doesn't participate in the holiday activities.
Two holiday parties a year. So what do they have? What do they have?
I'm trying to remember what the other one is. No, it's not Halloween. They don't have a Halloween one.
Like
so
December
it's
December and St. Patrick's Day or something?
I don't remember what it is. It's next semester.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Is it
maybe
New Year's?
You know what?
New Year's.
It might be towards, I think it's parties in general, and they wait towards the end of the year, kind of like a big celebration then.
Yeah.
And
so
I think
what
it's the
saying?
End of the year party.
Are you thumbs up or thumbs down?
I mean, I'm sure thumbs up.
Thumbs
That's
up
fine.
Parties. Don, what are you thinking, man?
Oh, I'm always thumbs up for more parties.
More parties, right?
Yeah, you want the kids to have fun at school.
Yeah.
And without parties, especially with all these testing, let's have some parties.
But I think people are really creative on how they celebrate because we want them to have school. So there's the challenge of how do you have fun without, you know, bringing in a million gazillion things.
So number party.
Who do we have on line two there, Marissa? Who do we have? Do we have a name?
We do have a caller. I believe it's Shelly on line two.
Shelly's on the line. Shelly, how you doing?
I'm doing fifth grade. How are y'all?
Good. Hey,
great.
What are you thinking on this, Shelly? Thumbs up, thumbs down on holiday parties.
Absolutely thumbs up.
Yeah, you like
a
good party.
Four kids, various ages, and it boosts their morale to have things like that to look forward to. They're all excellent students, and it doesn't get in the way of anything that they do.
Yeah, it's just, I think the whole morale booster is a good idea, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. If they have, if they're only working, there's a different dynamic. And if you have, they have little things like that to look forward to, it reminds them that they are going to have a little alleviation once in a while.
And you know what? True. They're kids after all, right?
They are.
Yeah. But see,
Shelly, thanks for calling in.
I think our school always has them. I think it is now, which is the winter party, which is a half day.
Yeah.
So I think it's on a Thursday. Thursday's the last day, so it's a half day. And then they have one at the end of the year. But you know what? The morale booster is that one. It's a half day, and then it's break. End it with a bang, I guess, right?
Yeah, so we asked one of our producers to put together sort of a list. I think Marissa put this together. So Boyden Elementary School in Walpole, Massachusetts, doesn't want holiday festivities to make any students uncomfortable. So they're all about the comfort of the kid. And this is maybe where the winter party comes from, right? Is this whole idea of making kids uncomfortable. And then they had other things like Valentine's Day and other dominant holidays are ending at some of these schools, according to a letter from the principal. This is in St. Paul, Minnesota. My personal feeling is we need to find a way to honor and engage in holidays that are inclusive of our student population. So a lot of this is about inclusivity, which we can get behind.
Sure.
But I wonder if there's a way to do that. I mean, you want to keep the parties going, though, right?
Sure. And they are. I mean, really, I haven't heard anyone saying that there aren't any parties. And even ours is a winter party. There is an elf on a shelf in almost every classroom and for the whole school.
Well, that's a whole pain in and of itself, right?
That's their problem, not mine. I don't really care, but I mean, that goes along with Santa, right?
Hey, our good buddy John. We haven't heard from Johnny in a while. Johnny, how you doing, man?
So far, so good. I think was a week or two ago.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
I don't think I was on the show, though, Johnny. You called a week that I wasn't here, so that's probably what happened. So,
all right,
so what do you think, Johnny, on this one?
I can give you that I can think of in favor of. The first one is, if you look at school as a microcosm of the future workplace, you teach kids to punch in at 8, punch out at 3, or stay late to do extra stuff. And, you know, like in the office, you have office parties.
Yep.
So it's a socialization skill. And the second reason is it's a nice welcome from being arrested and booked in the county jail.
Johnny, hey, did you have, when you were a little curmudgeon, did you have holiday parties in your school?
Yeah, Catholic school. We had Secret Santa for a few years, I believe.
Yeah.
But the nuns didn't get to get out of their shell. They had to stay in their habits, which was kind of a downer. Because there was a few nuns I would probably be curious about to see in civilian clothes. Although the last year or two of Catholic school, that was when they were changing the habits and liberalizing, so to speak, making their nun habits shorter. Which was, I guess, a humanizing thing.
Yeah. Wow, interesting stuff. Very good. Hey, Johnny, thanks for calling in, man.
All right, let's get cops out of school. That would be another reason to celebrate.
There you go. Thanks, Johnny. All right, so I'm going thumbs up for holiday parties today, and I'm a big
believer. I think everyone is.
Yeah, I think it's a good place to go. So
there we go.
Yeah, very good. All right, Mandy.
Are you ready?
Go. There you go.
It's unanimous.
It's unanimous. We need more controversy, don't we? Remember the days when we'd have lots of people calling in and saying no, thumbs down.
Elf on the Shelf, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah. But you didn't want to go there. You can rant. I've heard Mandy rant about Elf on the Shelf.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit before we go to Jason Bernal, our final guest today, as we talk about public schools and leadership. I wanted to ask you, going back to last Monday, are we seeing a state legislature, Mandy, that is going to respond around hurricanes, around the hurricanes? Because we certainly don't see the state sort of taking a kind eye towards working with schools around accountability.
Well, you're talking about tests. I mean, To be honest with you, that's a difficult one for me personally.
No, I get it, personally,
because even today when we were talking about it, and the guy's like, "Yeah, we're still going to be held accountable, even though we got hit, and there's less times." And you know, it's similar to yes, and families are still being accountable for their rent or whatever, even though they don't have a job. What do you do? It's not ideal. And so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have the test, the accountability test. You just can't penalize them, you know, funding wise, if they didn't perform as well, because these kids have a lot of baggage that they're dealing with emotionally, socially, basic needs wise. And so how can they, you know, perform their best? I didn't answer your question, but it's it's difficult. I would love to hear what Jason has to say.
Well, Jason's a rock star. He's with us today. Jason Bernal is with HISD. And hey, Jason, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing all right.
Great. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. You know, I caught the end of the thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah, what'd you think, Jason?
Well, I know my daughter would definitely be a thumbs up. I wouldn't mind having a party probably every single week. So she'd be all for it.
What is going on in Houston schools in regards to, are there any rules around parties around this time of the year and what you call them?
I don't know the specific policy. I know it's a couple of parties a year.
Yeah,
but
two.
I mean, you want to be inclusive and, again, you know, not make anybody feel uncomfortable. You know, this time of year, it closes out the first semester of school. So, I mean, there's a good opportunity to celebrate a lot at the end of the first semester. So,
especially after
this and the second semester.
Especially after this semester with the hurricane and everything, right? So, it's...
yeah, that's been a challenge, right? We started very late, and as a district, but then we also had other schools that had to completely move and didn't start until extremely late. So, you know, there's the conversation, like there's a curriculum issue in getting through everything, but then you also want to make sure that students are mastering all of the objectives that are being taught. So we're trying to get through that and being thoughtful of how we can meet the needs of every student.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you heard Jason, Bob, asking me about accountability. And do you feel like the state has an open ear or a shoulder that you can lean on in regards to the accountability, and in particular the tests? Do you think that there will be some compromise there, or are school districts just going to have to deal with what they have?
No, I think, you know, what I get is TEA definitely understands the issues that, you know, our school district has had another school district. So I think they'll definitely have an open ear to figuring out, you know, the best way to hold schools accountable and how to work with them. So they've been very open. I mean, you know, HISD's had to, you know, ask for certain waivers, and they've been open and working with us very well.
Jason, I want to talk a little bit about school transformation and school turnaround. You know, when we look at schools across the state, there are a lot of schools in need of a turnaround, and yet we do see significant amounts of movement, right, in terms of schools that, you know, there are researchers that would say the best predictor, and this is true, right, the best predictor of whether a school is doing well is sort of looking at the affluence of the school and the affluence of the parents. Yet we still see schools, a significant number of schools in our state, that are high poverty, but they're high performing. So we've turned them around in some way. Inevitably, when we look at those schools, there's always a strong leader, right? Leadership becomes of most importance for these schools. But the question I have for you is that I wonder is it possible to turn around schools and not rely just on a leader, or does that have to be part of the model?
Well, I think it absolutely has to be part of the model, right?
Yeah.
But but when we're talking about school leadership, you know, typically you talk about a principal, right?
Yep.
I think a principal is absolutely key to lead a turnaround effort. You also have to have leadership from the top, and then from the top you have to have individuals who are, you know, surrounding with the superintendents, who are working with, you know, the people who are holding principals accountable, and then the principals, I mean, ultimately they're hiring the teachers, and they're the instructional experts and helping guide the teachers to provide good lessons and holding students accountable. So I absolutely think you can make some strong turnaround with a principal, but the principal is not going to be able to do the job by themselves. Mm-hmm. They need the support, and they need help from others. Now, the big thing is, I think what HISD does a really, really good job at, they have a ton of resources. And, you know, my job and, you know, Academy White employees, we help, you know, determine what's best for campuses and work collaboratively with the principal to deliver what they need for their students.
Jason, you're talking about teachers. So it's the principal, but the teachers have got to be there. Are teachers in general, are they game? I mean, it takes a lot of time and energy to turn a school around, right? And it might not be as easy to be a teacher on a school that has more affluence. Do you feel that teachers feel supported to turn around a school? Do you feel like there is a passion for some teachers? Do you have to be special, right? Or can any teacher participate in turning around a school? That was like three questions, but you get my point.
You know, I think regardless if it's a turnaround school or if you're in a more affluent school, you have to have teacher buy-in to get results with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, that's part of the principal's job to figure out, you know, if a teacher can help the students out in their school. If the teacher isn't involved and, you know, they're not, you know, they're there for a paycheck, that comes out later on, and principals, they work to find out if they have to, unfortunately, remove a teacher or if they can help a teacher. And so, you know, what I would do as a principal and working with my principals, we find the right people in place and put them in place, and you look for some of those intangibles where can this teacher build a relationship with students? And if they're having a hard time just kind of getting the information to them, those are things that we can actually work with teachers on. But you have to have some of those intangibles where they can build relationships, whether they work well with others, and are in it for the right reasons, and which is ultimately making sure that kids are successful. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing is, I don't think there are a whole lot of teachers out there working in turnaround schools that, you know, enjoy seeing a school being on improvement required or their scores not going up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's kind of that intrinsic value, making sure that, you know, they're helping students and helping lives. So you're hoping that teachers are in for the right reasons, but we're definitely hiring to make sure that they are.
Jason, in the state of Texas, we have about 7,500 schools, right? All included, elementary, middle, high school. And about 4,000, a little over 4,000 of those schools are low-income schools. And I don't know if we could agree on this, but if you're in an affluent school, you could probably have an okay principal or maybe even a poor principal, and the kids will still do okay, right? But when you get down into those low-income schools, I wonder, do we have enough leaders? Do we have enough good principals that have the true leadership potential to really lead those 4,000 schools?
All right. I totally think we do,
but
I also think we have to make sure that we're developing people within our districts to work in those schools, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, in HISD, there are a lot of programs to develop assistant principals to become strong principals. And even when we're talking about just principals and principals, you have mentorships and peer groups to make sure that principals are talking with one another in order to make sure that, you know, students are getting what they need. I definitely think there are a lot of good leaders out there. Now, one thing that I will say, in the more affluent schools, principals have to be really strong.
Mm.
And the reason being, you've got to be a great instructional leader. You've got to be able to, you know, go into a classroom and seeing what a teacher's doing. Because if they're not being a good instructional leader, the parents will let them know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you get a large enough group of parents who are really unhappy, they can make life pretty difficult for the principal. The other thing is, principals, they have to be great community leaders, too. And, you know, in more affluent schools, you may have larger parental engagement. You have to be able to manage that as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So I feel like it takes a special person to run turnaround schools, but it takes a special person to run the more affluent schools, too. And in general, I think for principals, I mean, you just have to have it. It takes a special person to be a principal.
It's a hard job one way or another.
It takes a special person to be in a classroom
as
a teacher.
It does. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, one more thing on that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, a lot of people talk about improvement required schools, whether they're on the list or not on the list. You know, that's not the conversation that should be had, right?
Yeah.
I feel like the conversation that should be had is looking at the feeder pattern. So maybe you have a middle school or a high school that's on improvement required. We've got to look at what's happening in the lower levels as well.
Earlier on.
They may not be improvement required, but principals also need to work together to address an entire feeder pattern, how they're meeting the needs of all of the students. And I think, you know, HISD is starting to do a really, really good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very
you
good.
Hear more about the feeder patterns and how can yep. we make sure that the pipeline is clean, right, and people working
Absolutely.
Together.
You yeah. ready to do Jason's final four, Mandy?
Yes, sir. So this is an opportunity for listeners to get to know you a bit better, Jason. And the first question that we have for you is, what was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
Oh, that's a...
It's difficult.
Actually, it was an electronic football game. You put the little pieces on on top of the little table, and then you turn it on, and it would start vibrating.
My brothers had one of those.
Oh, I know
exactly
those.
What you're talking
I love those things.
They would try to score a touchdown, and that by far, I played that for... hours. That was my favorite.
It was so irrational, right? You just never.
Yeah, you couldn't control anything.
No, you couldn't.
Put
amazing.
The ball in a little plastic figure and then hit on, and hopefully they made it.
That's funny. And the second question is, what is your favorite school memory?
My favorite school memory. You know, in sixth grade, we did a science project where it was called Eggle to Nagle, and you had to get this raw egg and put it inside some sort of contraption, and then it was dropped off the top of the gym. And,
oh, wow.
You know, there was a lot of science to it, but, you know, one of the other things, if your egg made it, you know, everyone was clapping, but then they had, like, an extra credit thing, and it wasn't like you didn't get an A or anything. They had, like, bonus points where you can use... You know, the dollars in a school store, but they would let you eat the raw egg and they gave you extra points. I don't think that would fly now.
No.
You know, back in the 70s, that was... That
so
was,
did you get the extra there. Bonus points?
Did you get the bonus
points? I did.
Points? Oh,
I got it.
That's why it's his favorite memory.
Yeah, well,
right.
I did it.
Right.
And what was your favorite book to read as a child?
Oh, when I was really young, it was The Little Red Hen. Big red book
mm-hmm.
and all had all of the you know the stories in there. And then, you know, as I got older, my one of my favorite things to read was like The Illustrated Man. I loved that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Ray Bradbury, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our final question for the day on our final four with you, Jason Bernal, is what was your favorite movie when you were a kid?
Favorite movie when I was a kid. Not when I was a kid, but the big Mission Impossible fan.
Oh.
So, you know, those came out when I was, you know, I think when I was in college, but that's something that...
You still love it.
I always watch.
But, you know, growing up, I always loved watching the holiday shows, like the old Charlie Brown and the, you know, Frosty the Snowman stuff.
All those kids.
Tis the season.
I didn't have that. In Puerto Rico, we didn't have those little holiday shows, which are such a big deal here.
Yeah,
though, so.
They are a big deal.
I think I do remember seeing Frosty the Snowman, but I can't remember how to say snowman in Spanish now. So Frosty.
I don't know either.
You don't know. Yeah. Jason Bernal is over at HISD. He is the chief school officer in secondary transformation schools. Jason, I want you back, man. You need to come back on the show sometime soon.
Anytime you'd like. I'm here for you.
All right. Jason, take care. Thank you so much for what you do. And thanks for being on the program.
Thank you. We'll talk to you guys later.
Okay,
take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mandy, another show.
Already.
Yeah, wow. So.
It was a good one.
Yeah, it was a very good one. I thought all our guests were really great today, right?
Yes.
All our guests
they
are always are good, right?
That's
so,
right.
Hey, in our last 30 seconds, I want to thank you, Mandy.
Thank you.
And remind people about the Holiday Spectacular right on Christmas Day.
That's
right. Right on Christmas
Day.
2 to 4 is when it's going to be. So we want to remind people about that. I want to thank Marissa. I want to thank Don. I want to thank Jane, all the people that work so hard to make our show the show that it is. And, hey, out there, make sure you're hugging your kids. And make sure you're hugging the community and taking care of all of our kids. We do this for children. And we'll see you next time here on Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio.
The historic Heights Theater on 19th Street has been reborn as a community art house, now hosting a wide variety of concerts and special events. Upcoming shows include a Tex-Mex Holiday Fiesta with Los Tex-Maniacs, featuring Flaco Jimenez, Peter Rowan, and Rick Trevino December 20th, Guy Forsythe and Carolyn Wonderland roasting and toasting the holidays on December 21st, and Shiny Ribs getting ready for the new year with a special show on December 30th. For more information, visit theheightstheater.com. This is KPFT Houston.
NHL star Matt Martin for American Humane.
I've had my fair share of bruises and injuries, but for many who put their lives on the line every day, it's not always the injuries you can see that hurt the most. Every single day, 184 veterans are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. When medications and therapy don't help, professionally trained service dogs can. American Humane has created a free guide to help veterans obtain these life-saving animals. For help, please go to AmericanHumane.org.
We want to thank you, the listeners, and those who contributed to our successful fall fund drive. This is Interim General Manager Larry Winters asking you to please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to your favorite Pacifica Foundation station, KPFT. This can be done in several different ways. You can call our business department at extension 314 at 713-526-4000 during business hours, or go to kpft.org, or go to kpftfacebook.com/kpfthouston. Then click on the donate button, and don't forget, you're listening to KPFT 90.1 in Houston.
Like Bonnie and Clyde, Johnny and June, nothing to gain, nothing to lose.